You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 27th, 2015, and this podcast reeks of crow. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alpore.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And this week we have another debrief. If you're new to the show, here's how debriefs work. We discuss some non-spoilery elements of the game, generally the mechanics, and then we dive right into spoilers. We'll give you a good clear warning, and we'll talk about some of the narrative and mechanical spoilers, if that applies, about that game. This week, of course, the much lauded Bloodborne. Scott and I both beat the game.
Yep.
Can we just get a round of applause?
Yeah.
The fact that both you and I beat Bloodborne.
That was good.
I feel pretty good about that.
It was definitely an accomplishment. And I'd like to point out that if we leave this note for spoilers, you have to rate it if it's fair or foul.
Yes, fair or foul. Oh, man. I left some troll notes, by the way, in the game.
I probably downvoted them to oblivion.
Oh, love it. Love it. Knowing that I single-handedly caused some people to die makes me really happy. So we're talking about Bloodborne.
Yes.
We'll go into some of our thoughts on the game now.
Yeah.
I do think that there is mechanical spoilers.
Oh yeah,
in
for
this
sure.
game. So yeah. I will say that let's be pretty vague, and then we'll go into spoilers.
Yeah.
It is the type of game though that I think if you're playing it or you're playing along, there are certain moments that aren't super spoilery. So maybe listen in and go to up to your comfort level.
And if you just started, we actually did a few weeks ago. We
did
a part one where because we knew this game would take us forever to beat. So we did part one where we got up through about, I think, the forest or something.
Yes.
I think if
the haunted woods.
Yeah.
Pretty early, actually, it turned out to be. Like maybe about a third of the game.
All things considered, we saw a fair amount to go. But, I mean, we can do the rest of it, I think, in a relatively non-spoilery way at first, because I just kind of want to know what your overall thoughts were. Were you at that point in the forest? Were you sold on finishing the rest of the game, or you're like, okay, I'm just gonna take this one day at a time?
I had played some of Dark Souls, so I knew that I knew how punishing a game like this could be. And at that point, a house is on fire. The hunter's dream. At that point, I figured there was a real chance I didn't beat this game.
Mm.
And I knew and accepted that. And I think that really calmed me down. It made the game more manageable, knowing that I wasn't going to, potentially, I wasn't going to beat the game.
Mm.
I recently read a review, and I don't remember who wrote it, but it was really critical of Bloodborne, and it was anti the sort of what they were calling the sort of universal praise of Bloodborne.
Mm.
And one of their reasons for saying that the reviews were not an accurate representation or an objective representation of a critical analysis of the game was because all of the people reviewing it had played Dark Souls, and therefore they were predisposed towards not only being better at Bloodborne, but enjoying it more.
Yeah.
I think that as someone who never played the first Dark Souls, played a little bit of Dark Souls 2 and then gave up, I think they're totally wrong. I think Bloodborne is way more accessible than Dark Souls 2, and I thought it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it, and no regrets whatsoever. I think everyone should play it. I think everyone can and has the capacity to excel in it.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
You can grow up someday and become a hunter.
You too can be a hunter.
I think that's an interesting criticism. I didn't read the thing, but if you follow that train of logic, it's like, okay, well, who hasn't seen a Steven Spielberg movie? Should you then not see other Steven Spielberg movies? Should you not review it? It's just kind of, it is a weird logical thread to go down.
Right.
Then again, I haven't read that thing.
What I will say is there are people out there who've never played Dark Souls games, and they're reading reviews from people where a lot of it's like, oh, this was very much like Dark Souls, or, if you've played Dark Souls, this is a classic. So I get a sense that you could read or listen to reviews about Bloodborne and think, well, this isn't really written from my perspective. So let me say it right now. I am a filthy casual. I would lie, cheat, and steal to get through games. I never played Dark Souls. I didn't beat Dark Souls 2. I still think that this is a relatively accessible game. Yeah. It's just that the lore and the mythology around it builds itself up. And that's part of the enjoyment of it, right? Like, we build it up and build it up of, like, this is going to be impossible to beat. This is going to be really hard. Mm. You're not going to be able to do it alone. And the game builds in all of these elements that let you overcome these challenges in really metered out ways. Mm. It rewards patience. There's all sorts of... I think one of the most excellent things about the game is that at any point that you're stuck, there's probably other stuff you can do.
Yep.
Either go fight a different boss or level up or explore a new area or go back to an old area because it's changed now and you can experience some new lore bits.
Yeah.
That's a really rich experience that lets you tackle objectives at your own pace in a way that I don't think, or I haven't seen the game get as much appreciation for. And that element, yeah, I think, makes it more accessible than the way that we imagine it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in a similar boat, except that I played Demon's Souls and then took a break for Dark Souls.
And Demon's Souls is even harder, right? Historically.
Theoretically, I have nothing to compare it against, but Bloodborne is certainly easier than Demon's Souls,
yeah,
in my opinion, anyway. And, you know, I think they did some smart things to, you know, they cut down on the number of weapons that you can have.
Yeah.
Like, in Demon's Souls, I was constantly picking up, like, slightly different versions of the same sword I had, and I was like, oh god, what do I do?
Yep.
Like, should I invest a little bit in here, or am I splitting my resources? Like,
right,
you know, in order to cast spells, you have to be holding a certain type of weapon, and that, mm-hmm, also adds weight, and that, like, I don't know, it's...
Yeah.
They really pared down the core experience, but they kept the... they kept the punishing combat aspect, yes, of it. Yeah. Like, you really have to be paying attention. Like,
they also removed the ability, I guess, and I didn't know, but they removed the ability to upgrade your armor.
Oh, yeah.
And you can wear different armor, but generally speaking, I don't think the armor really matters all that much. So people, yeah, just usually wear armor that they think looks cool.
Yeah. Or it matters a lot for the resistance.
Yes, yeah.
Like, if you're going to be poisoned or something, like, it really behooves you to switch out your armor.
Totally, yeah, because, yeah, you could get armor that maxes that out, but that's, yeah, way easier to understand than, oh gosh, should I level up this armor, or which, yeah, resistance do I want to invest in now? In terms of weapons, I only used maybe 3 or 4 weapons the entire game.
Yeah, pretty
for
much.
Almost probably 90% of the game, I used the Kirkhammer, mm, and it was great, and I loved it, and I never felt a need to change, and I thought it was super fun.
So did you start off with the
I started off with the axe.
Oh, the axe.
The axe,
got it.
Yeah.
Did you stick with the axe for a while?
I did, yeah. I stuck, yeah, with the axe for quite a while. And then once I could buy the Kirkhammer, which scales better with strength, which was what I was leveling anyway,
yeah,
I switched to that. And the Kirkhammer is great because it has a really quick attack on the basic weapon. And then when you go into trick mode and extend that weapon, the hammer
trick
is like
mode. It's like huge, Tony Hawk.
It's like, whoa! Yeah. It's gnarly, man. You get to grind on stuff. It's cool. Huge sledgehammer, really effective on the full charge. Does a stupid amount of damage as you level it up.
I did a similar thing. I started with the whip, though. So mine, I was always a bit more focused on, like, the skill stat, because the whip is always with that. And then I... the Ludwig's Holy Blade.
Ah, yes. The one that I Ludwig's Holy Blade seems really cool, actually.
Yeah, but it's a similar dynamic that you described with the Kirkhammer, because the secondary attack is you just sheath the sword into the sheath, but then the sheath itself is a gigantic greatsword,
yeah,
and so you have this super slow charge-up attack, but it does massive amounts of damage if you land it correctly.
I think generally the weapon design was really good too, right? Like, all the weapons look really cool or bizarre. Like, everyone who saw the Kirkhammer is like, why do you have a huge, like, boulder on your back right now? I was like, check this out.
Oh, here it
shrink,
is.
Shriek. Whoosh.
Mjolnir.
The damage that you, and the animations that you do when you attack with one weapon and then combo it into going into trick mode is always gorgeous.
Yeah.
All of the weapons seem totally cool and unique. The stake driver, the Rider Palash, where you can fire the gun, right? Or,
after,
like, extend your weapon. The scythe that you can get later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is just, it looks so cool.
Yeah, that was one of the things that continuing to play it and, you know, get into the secondary areas and some of the other areas, like, it didn't, like, the game didn't, like, jump out in front and say, like, all right, this is a next gen game. This is why you bought a PS4, even though it was literally why I bought a PS4. But, like, I started noticing the small details in it,
mm-hmm,
like the types of animations that you were talking about. In the Nightmare Frontier, where there's, like, little piles of rocks, there's, like, little, and you can tell that they were made by some consciousness. Yes. Like, they're like little temples of rocks, yeah. and you kick them over, then it makes a skittering yeah. noise that freaks you out. Like,
yeah.
it's like tiny that, little things. Yes.
And,
you know,
and,
like,
and those rocks are great, right? Yeah. Like, because not only can you knock them over and it's a cool environmental thing, but you're right. The yeah. first time you bump into those, what was that?
yeah.
Like, you're so used to being pounced upon and ambushed, and the feeling that, you know, a lantern is this great place of safety,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot of lanterns in this game that are right next to yeah. terrifying enemies. So if you knock over some rocks in Nightmare Frontier, you're like, oh god, I don't know what could have happened.
Start
right?
swinging wildly.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows?
Like, yeah, I just the tiny, or like the times when you would be fighting an enemy and push him off a cliff as he dies, and the blood drains down the side yeah. of the cliff, so you can kind of see, or like, remember, like, I was showing you, like, hey, this is what my battlefield looks like, and because I was using the whip, it was like long ropes
yeah,
of blood.
Yeah, it was so cool. Everywhere. Yeah, it's like yeah. horizontal stripes yeah. of blood.
It's like these just tiny little details that, you know, obviously the game has a lot of scale, but it's also on the very minute level, you know, they, and I think this is just part of the world building, like, these places feel just meticulously designed, even in the tiny little details.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. like we said in the last podcast too, the level design is mind-blowing. Like,
yeah.
when you realize how things connect,
yeah.
I wish I could see what those, like, mapping sessions were like when mm-hmm. they were designing how the levels interconnect.
Yeah.
Because at some point, I mean, right now, I could probably draw you a pretty good map of Yharnam, of mm. Cathedral Ward, like, how things work and where they go.
Yeah.
That's just so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and all of them are little treats, right? Like, have you been to Upper Cathedral Ward?
Mm-hmm.
So Upper Cathedral Ward is basically a horror game.
Oh, wait, no, maybe I haven't. I don't think I ever unlocked it.
Yeah, so there's a yeah. there's a place that you can unlock optionally called yeah. Upper Cathedral Ward, and tonally it feels very different.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a horror game. The rest of the game is also terrifying, but that level in particular is designed for, like, jump scares and bad lighting and
yeah.
atmosphere. It's really cool. Whereas you go to Cainhurst Castle,
mm-hmm.
and Cainhurst Castle feels totally different. You're
yeah.
on, like, a mountain peak, and there's snow, and there's different enemies, like, enemies that you'd fight never again in the game.
Yeah.
They only exist at Cainhurst Castle,
yep.
but they still feel rich and unique and cool.
Yeah.
And the fact that you could potentially miss it, never go to Cainhurst Castle,
mm-hmm.
never see those enemies, get yep. those weapons, get that backstory, is crazy.
Yeah. That's the thing, I think, overall, like, after playing one of these games, because, like, you know, whether it's the Souls games or whether it's Bloodborne, like, you will inevitably get pissed off at the game at a certain point,
right.
but if you take a step back, for me anyway, the reason why I like these games so much is that there is this underlying level of respect for the player.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you're going to get one-shotted sometimes, and you'll get in a bad combo, and someone will just take, you know, a low-level enemy will take you out, and you'll just be swearing at the game, right?
Yeah.
But there's an underlying level of respect where it's like, we're not going to, like, bombard you with stupid mini-map HUD icons.
Yep.
Like, we're not going to put you through tutorials and walkthroughs and stuff. We're not going to give you arrows, like, and we're not going to, additionally, we're not going to give you busy work. If you want to skip this, you probably can.
Yep.
Like, there's a critical path through the game where you can skip out on most of the bosses.
Yeah, you only have to fight, like, four bosses.
Yeah, so it's like, if you don't want to do this, fine. We're not going to draw attention to it, and if you want it, here it is for you to take. Also, you have to look for it pretty carefully, because, like, you saw, I walked right by a major mechanic in the
yep.
game
yeah.
for, like, about half the game.
Yeah, I was like, how do you not have mechanic. Runes? How do you not have hero runes, Scott?
Just walked right by it. And it's like, that level of respect is something that is in so few games. And it's not, I'm not saying that games that tutorialize are bad, but it's just that they don't have the level of either faith or disinterestedness, however you want to look at
yep.
it. Like, they don't have, whichever way you look at it, it's confidence.
Yeah.
Like, the game and the creators are so confident that people will either hate it and leave, and that's
yep.
fine. Or they'll love it and stay on the merits of the game itself,
yeah.
not the tutorialization of those merits.
100% agree. Yeah, totally. The other day, I tweeted this out, but I had played a bunch of League of Legends matches, like, in our ranked game, and we
yeah.
lost all of them. And I was so frustrated because I felt like I really didn't do well,
yeah.
and I didn't know why I didn't do well, and I didn't feel like I learned from those matches, and it was frustrating. And I can put in a lot of effort, and you could get better at multiplayer
yeah.
games. But, I mean, this is, again, one of those elements where there's this mythology around these types of games that they're so brutally hard, and they are. But the way that they teach you is so clear
mm-hmm.
and obvious that it feels so good. And it's really hard. Like, I'm having a hard time playing games that are not Bloodborne now.
Yeah.
Because I feel like no one does that sense of learning, that sense of accomplishment, that sense of knowing why I made a mistake and being able to actuate and improve on it the next time around. No one does that as well as Bloodborne. And it's not their fault. It's very, very difficult to do, right? But, you know, those times when you die because of a low-level character, and I know when that happens, I say almost universally one sentence, are you fucking serious?
Yep.
And I'm not talking to the game. I'm talking to myself. Like, George, are you serious?
Yeah.
Why did you let that guy do that to you?
Yep.
You should have known. You've either fought him before, you're in an environment where you know this is perfect for an ambush.
Mm-hmm.
You saw a warning sign and you rushed up ahead, or you didn't throw a pebble and you had pebbles. Like, all of the ways that I die that feel cheap to me are cheap because I could have done better and I didn't. And I take that as a lesson and I apply that and I get better. And that feeling of progression feels so good. Like, this is why some people play games. Mm-hmm. That feeling you get is just of accomplishment. It's amazing. And, you know, the first time I beat Germit, or Gaskion, one of the hardest bosses in the game, and the first boss you fight, I felt so good. I just felt so freaking good.
The scale, I think the boss scaling of difficulty is actually really challenging, probably purposefully, just to get you used to it. But, like, I don't know, maybe at this point we should actually get into the the mechanics and levels. I think maybe we should just bundle everything together since it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I think that there's some really cool elements that I want to talk about mechanically, like boss fights that are spoilery.
Yeah.
So, for what it's worth, I think that this game is amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's easily in my top games of the year so far.
Yeah.
Play it.
Yeah.
Even if you think it's not for you.
Because
I think you would be surprised.
If there is an entry point, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, to these types of games, like, this is the entry point. All right, so spoilers from here on out, we're going to talk about some of the special items and also what we made of the plot. I am extremely interested at what happened to you at the end of the game.
Okay, so I think that we should do one of our games where you describe what you think the plot is, because I've read, I read like a 75-page treatise on all of the plot of Bloodborne.
Okay.
And I'm in love with it, by the way. I think the plot is amazing.
So I was only somewhat paying attention to it.
Okay.
There is some sort of force in the world, like in the universe,
yes,
that is creating this cyclical phenomena of monster nightmares, basically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of the game, you kind of get a hint of what that force may actually be.
Ooh, okay.
Well, shit. Maybe depending on what type of ending you got.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about it.
Okay. And then there are factions within the world that deal with this force in different ways.
Yes.
There's the Healing Church, which is kind of like fighting against the dark arts. There's like the Vile Bloods that are like maybe somewhat aligned with this dark force, mm-hmm. or maybe they've splintered off from the Healing Church.
and there are splinter groups from the Healing Church, yeah. The Workshop, there's the Jura, the guy, they used to like use explosives, the cannon and all the weird weapons.
And then there's just the dark forces, basically, as well.
Eldritch Truths.
They actually call them like the Old Ones or something like that.
Yeah, the Great Ones. Yeah, the Old Ones, yeah.
And so
they're basically Elder Gods. And what's great is I love that they also managed to sell this game as a Gothic horror, and then it becomes an Eldritch horror game. It becomes Cthulhu-esque.
Yeah.
That transition from one to the other is fucking mind-blowing.
Especially when the other games in the series were very, like, medieval focused, and this one was sold as like, hey, you're fighting werewolves, and then all of a sudden like things with tentacles on their faces.
I mean, the
start
first time
up.
That you turn a corner and you see like a celestial, which is like a weird blue alien creature that like fires it, you're like, what the hell is that?
So the hunters are another faction that is there to cleanse these foul streets. And it's somewhat unclear. They're kind of like these mercenaries that people kind of like but also don't really trust completely, because they do ally themselves kind of closely with some of the dark arts things in order to fight against them.
That's right.
And it depends on what type of hunter you are. And then you, as playing as a hunter, are going through one of these nightmares and trying to figure out whether it's actually a nightmare, it's actually the real world, or if you're actually dreaming.
Yes.
Or if there's kind of like a Matrix-esque thing going on where it's like, this is actually the real world, but most of the people live in like blissful ignorance most of the time, except yes. for when these nightmares come through the veil.
Yes.
That's basically my overall interpretation.
Your reading of the story. Yeah, okay. Like yeah, so I'll link it in the show notes, but there's yeah. this great
I want to see this novel theory. That you
found. It's like a, yeah, it's like 60 or 75 pages,
yeah.
different chapters, all the chapters about certain elements of the game. But yeah, I mean, that's basically it, right? Mm-hmm. The lore is that a long time ago in the Fumerian Labyrinth,
yeah.
that's underneath Yharnam, people found a great one, mm-hmm. a living great one, and eventually they somehow started drinking its blood to evolve themselves,
yeah.
and that blood is what infected them with the Scourge, which turns people into beasts, hence the hunt has to happen to cleanse the foul streets of those beasts.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other stuff that's really fascinating.
Yeah. Okay, we'll wait on the ending for a little bit more.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about where we left off, like... I think it was Eigenworth, I think.
Oh, Bergenworth. Bergenworth, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we were about to beat Rom the Vacuous Spider.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And this is actually a great turning point, because the moment you beat Rom the Vacuous Spider, the game changes dramatically.
Yeah, the tone of it.
All of the... Yeah, so once you beat Rom, that's when the truth of the world, the sort of Eldritch Horror old god truth, is far more clear. The sky changes color. The blood moon falls. We see Yharnam for the first time, which is the woman...
Who
appears after you kill Rom the Vacuous Spider. You start hearing the crying of a baby in the background. You can see the amygdalas, which are the huge spider-like beast creatures.
I want to talk about that for a minute, because that was one of my favorite parts of the game, because there are certain parts of the game where you're just walking around, and all of a sudden, something will, like... blast you out of nowhere.
And you're just like, what was that?
What is that? And then as the game goes on and your sanity, your insight, excuse me, increases and the amount of bosses you beat increases, it becomes clear that there's these fucked up Cthulian amygdala spider things that are covering the city.
Huge, covering the city. Yeah.
And they were just invisible to you. They've been there the entire game.
The whole game that they've been there,
You just now get to see it.
I love that. Yeah. And I love that it's tied to insights, right? Yeah. Like, so most of the game, you won't see that. Once you beat Rom, you've sort of... The veil has been lifted. You now realize that there are basically two parallel worlds, right? Yep. The nightmare and the waking world that are layered on top of each other.
Yep.
And you won't be able to see that unless you have enough insight. And as you gain insight, when you do New Game Plus, you see them right off the bat. They're there.
Yeah.
What's crazy is there's other things. Like, if you have a significant enough insight, you always hear that baby crying in a way that you don't normally hear, right? When you beat Murgo's wet nurse, you hear that baby crying.
Or like the other...
Up until the moment you do that.
You hear the those weird kind of... like mushroom capped enemies start singing when you're close to them, like the ones that start you frenzied just by looking at them.
My god, you want to hear some crazy theory shit about those guys?
Here we go.
All right, so these are these are enemies that this right here encapsulates one of the reasons why I fucking love this game so much, right? So those enemies are they're basically have giant brains on their head, and their head, and you always hear throughout this section of the game, you know, put eyes on our brains so we may see as like the great ones or whatever, right? So Mikolaj, one of the characters in the game, wants to sort of be uplifted, and one of the ways they do that is by putting eyes on your brain, right? To give you insight into the sort of greater truth. These enemies, you cannot look at them, because if you look at them, anytime you have direct line of sight with them, they drive you crazy, they start doing immense amount of damage, and they frenzy you, which will basically kill you.
Yep.
And so the game gives you all of these methods of avoiding eye contact. You can be behind walls, you can stealth behind them and run around them, right? So some fans wanted to like investigate the game more and tried to get good screenshots of these enemies in particular. Yeah. The crazy thing is if you look really closely, and you'll never see this because you never want to look at them, but if you actually look at them, if you actually do what the game doesn't want you to do, they're wearing the clothes of the doll from the Hunter's Dream.
What?
They're all female, and they're all wearing doll clothes.
Oh,
and
God.
The thing on their heads, those aren't brains, those are the messengers. Their giant brain is all messengers.
Man.
So there's this really like weird element, and part of this wonderful theory that I love is that the doll in your dream is actually like a great one that has been created in much the same way some of the other great ones have been created. And that these are like weird abominations that connect to that.
Failures of the...
Right, like you have to ask yourself, right? What is Waifu doll? What is she all about, right?
Or, like, I knew you.
And what are the... Like, what are the messengers in the Hunter's Dream all about, right?
Yep.
And the fact that there are enemies in the game that are wearing the same outfit
mm-hmm.
is super bizarre. And if you go to the old workshop, which is where Gurnam first sort of created the Hunter's Dream stuff. Mm. There's an old doll there that is lifeless and dead.
Man, that's and again, you could just walk by all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
As most of us did.
I mean, I think that there is genuine enough lore in here to explore some of those ideas and themes really well. Like, I think that there's enough evidence to suggest that the Great Ones took sympathy on Gurnam and created a doll to keep him company.
Yeah.
Because he was lonely.
Yeah. That also influences the ending that I saw too. Okay. Yes. At that point, I feel like the game really takes a turn. And if you can stick with the game up to this point, I would challenge you to stop playing at that point.
Yeah. It's,
you know,
it's
like,
pretty compelling.
Like, oh man, like what the heck is going on here? Like for nothing else, just to understand it, you would have to keep playing.
And you get to these moments where like it changes how you play too, right? The moment you enter Old Yharnam, not only is the world covered in these spider amygdala things, but there are now these women who ring bells.
Yeah.
And the bells revive enemies and make them stronger.
Yep.
So before, you thought you were being aggressive before in order to get your blood back. You have to dash through waves of enemies, kill the bell-ringing woman, and then start fighting again. And if you don't, then the game is way more challenging.
Yeah.
So you enter this weird world where you just can't play the normal way that you do, where, okay, it's a little bit at a time, I'm going to inch my way out. No, make a mad dash, find that bell-ringing woman, die, but now you know, now you have a sense of what this landscape is.
Yep.
And it becomes this sort of frenetic paced thing until it, again, it rains back, it gives you space again, you're exploring the Nightmare Frontier and things like that.
Yeah. What else should we talk about? Because there's the jail, there's
the kidnapping to Old Yharnam is super cool. I think a lot of the hunter fights are really exciting.
Yeah.
Because they're like mini boss fights.
That fight where you had to fight three of them.
Yeah. So I succeeded by lured one away,
killed him,
died fighting the other two, came back, lured the other one away, and did it like that, cycled.
Yeah. I think, and that's one of the other things I feel like that maybe going back to the earlier comment about, you know, who is reviewing this game and what they're doing is you have to be okay with the idea of using every single advantage you have. If that's being able to clip through the environment and hit someone through like a railing, fine. That's
great.
It.
Yeah.
Because the enemy's going to do that to you too. Yeah. So it's like, this is just part of the game. You know, like this is just like part of the set of rules that we're thinking about. It's like, throw away the pretense of, okay, the fair way to do this is, no, fuck that. It's like, you have to do it the way that will let you win.
Yes.
You know? And that only gets more and more extreme, I feel like, as the game goes on, because there's more enemies like those guys or like the huge monstrosity that you have to fight at the very bottom of the old city, where there's some bell ringing women on the catwalk.
What is it called? The One Reborn, I think.
Yeah,
it's
the One Reborn. Yeah, like there's just some enemies that will destroy you.
That fight is great.
Yeah.
And then he like creates a slime.
Mm-hmm.
That fight is really fun.
Because you just have to know, like, okay, I'm gonna exploit every single advantage I have.
With that in mind, how do you feel about calling in allies?
Because
I know some people didn't want to do it.
I definitely did a mix. Sometimes I would do it, sometimes I wouldn't. Like, I had an ally the second time I fought the reborn beast or whatever. But like I didn't have an ally for, you know, some of the like the electrical beast. I never fought that guy. Oh man.
Well, I mean, I did fight that guy, but I was way under leveled.
Yeah.
I died and then haven't beat him, I should say.
I guess I feel like this is probably the most social one of these games I've ever played. Probably just because I'm playing it right when it came out.
Yep.
And
that's the other thing, too, though. Like, I think that you should play it as soon as possible. I mean, the multiplayer elements of the game are superb. And I used allies a lot. And some of the most exciting fights were with allies. Like, one of them would die, so it would just be me. But they whittled them down enough, so I would get the last killing blow. But
thanks.
Just barely. So it feels so good to do it with friends. And you know, you see signs all the time like, oh, call for help, or, you know, it's a hunter is never alone. Like, things like that make me feel really good. I feel like I'm tied to this greater experience.
Playing through some of the New Game Plus, I've had to call in help on every boss fight.
Really?
Like, the bosses are just ridiculously hard.
Oh my god, I cannot
New
imagine Gaskeon.
Yeah, it was the same thing. And I mean, I am now better at the game, so I know the patterns, so that makes it a little bit easy, but they just have so much HP that whatever penalty you get for calling them in, which I think actually does penalize you somehow, it's still worth it because you just need people to distract cool aggro, the enemies. Yeah. It's like, I just need somebody to run around while I wail on them. You know?
I beat Martyr Lagarius with two other people, and it was still like a relatively close fight because we're just trading aggro going in. Like,
Which one is that one again?
That's the one at the top of Canehurst Castle.
Oh, right, that guy,
the queen. Yeah.
God, that guy. So annoying. Like, that guy really reminded me of, like, a Demon Souls fight. That like, guy there was a lot of those. That guy types was really hard.
What was your favorite boss fight?
I actually liked, I think it was Mikolash.
Yeah, Mikolash was fun.
I thought that was almost like a Metal Gear fight, almost.
Where he's, like, running around away from you?
Yeah, and, like, there's a point where he runs down a hallway and, like, he slams a door behind him, so you have to go up and jump down into the room.
So I kind of cheesed that one by shooting him from above with a cannon, getting him low, and then I dove in and, like, quickly killed him. Felt real good, though.
But, like, there's so many... Like, that fight specifically is... It's interesting because that fight clues you into some of the lore of the game, which is interesting.
Give us eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like Cosm. Some call it Cosmos. Or it's Cause. Or some call it Cosm. And it's like, what is going on? But the other thing is, it puts you in an unfamiliar situation where you're running after an enemy, which is something that usually doesn't happen. Enemies are respawning, but you're extremely vulnerable because those enemies don't have blood. So if they hit you, there's no way for you to get that blood back. So every hit is crucial. Yeah. Like if you get tagged by a few of those grunts that are in there, which by the way constantly respawn, there's no way to get your health back besides using one of your vials. And so it's just so frustrating when you are not paying attention and one of those guys hits you because there's no way to get that HP back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I like that quite a bit. I actually thought those last couple bosses were very strong.
Yeah.
I thought the wet nurse literally was really strong.
Yeah, the wet nurse I did with co-op too, and that one was super close.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's a subtle thing, but, you know, she casts that shadow spell or whatever where you can only see the blades flicking around.
Yeah. And you don't want to go near those.
Nope, not even a little bit. I thought that was pretty cool.
You know, if you play the music box when you're by that baby, the baby will laugh.
Oh, man.
It'll, like, giggle.
I played the music box for the first time in New Game Plus at the Father.
Oh, Father Gaston, because
I didn't have it the first time around.
Yeah.
And that makes that battle a lot easier, I'll tell you that. there must have been some others that I thought were pretty cool. I think overall, though, like, I liked the forest environment a lot.
It was just so lost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I was like, man, this is probably the most lost I've ever been, except for that one game we played where we had to make our own map. Remember that? Yeah. What was that game called?
Oh, yeah.
It was the one where you were sick, you had a virus or something like that.
Oh, I don't remember.
You had to triangulate your own coordinates. That's probably the most lost I've ever been in a video game, but this is probably, like, up there. Because, like, you just get turned around, and it's like, I started putting coins on the ground to, like,
it's
like, oh, okay, I've been down this path before. Like, oh, I'm going in circles now. Great.
I really liked the design of Canehurst Castle. I thought that was a really fun level. And I really enjoyed the Mikolash's area. That whole design of that structure is cool. Especially with the giant eyed brain thing that's attacking you.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those fights were really fun.
I spent a lot of time in that last area because I used that area to grind for experience. And what I would do is I would just ring the resonance bell and get sucked into other people's worlds, because I had finished the wet nurse and I was like, well, I'm clearly underleveled for what I'm doing next. And so I would just go through that track where you fight the shadows of Yharnam, but now they're just normal enemies.
Yeah, they're just other you only see those guys in two places.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, these guys used to be bosses.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, now you're fighting five of them.
Yeah. Well, it was great, too. And again, another one of those emergent moments. So the first time I go to that area, right, and I only went through that area, I think, once because I found the lantern so I can skip it afterwards. There's two really large pigs.
Oh, yeah.
And I killed one of the pigs. The other one charged me, and I roll out of the way, and he goes through this little gap in the fence and falls down. Now, there's no way back up except for a ladder, so the pig leaves, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't have to fight this pig. I don't know what he's got. Maybe he's stuck somewhere, right? I'm going, and I see the shadows of Yharnam coming down the lane, and I'm like, okay, I better get ready, start prepping my stuff. I see the pig come out from behind them, attack the shadows, and he kills, like, three of them. And then I went and finished them off. So satisfying.
That was, it's that type of stuff, and it continues to go. I think that type of stuff becomes more and more prevalent as the game goes on.
Yep.
Like that, the last part, like where you're up in the loft and stuff like that, like that was some of my favorite parts.
I mean, there are all sorts of crazy moments that, I mean, one of the reasons I like this game so much is coming into work and being like, oh, this happened to me last night, or I did this, right? Like, there's a part in the woods where all the time you'll see warnings, oh, trap ahead. Mm-hmm. And at one point, it says trap ahead, and I'm like, okay, I think I see the trap. This guy jumps out at me, like, that was probably it. Yeah. Plus, I see, okay, I'm just going to avoid it here. I'll just walk a little bit this way. Crash! I fall into a pit. I'm like, oh my god, I thought I knew where the trap was. I was so wrong. And that moment of panic, of like, oh my god, and then you barely survive.
And you don't know what's down there. It, of course, it's crows.
Oh, reeks fucking of crows. You should have known.
Yeah, like, there's those little things where it's, it always surprises you, but the game is cyclical, so it knows you might fail. You might not get out of it, but the point is that you will then know where it is after that. Yeah, it's just so much of that was great. I also got invaded a lot towards the last couple of levels of the game.
Yeah, a couple times I did.
Because...
Well, there's bell-ringing women automatically.
Yeah, a lot of those last levels have bell-ringing people, and... You know, if I ever wanted to pull in somebody, when you ring the bell, it attracts one of the bell ringing women, and then they just spawn one of those in. So it opens you up for PvP.
Yeah.
And that those are actually some of the most intense emergent moments for me, because people would come in and there's just like this shot of adrenaline. It's like, okay, somewhere on the map there is another human, and the only reason why they're here is to kill me.
Yep.
Like the only way they can get out. There's three ways they can get out. They can give up, which of course they're not going to do.
Although I did see someone, like one time I was with three people and someone came
in. They were just like, nope.
I don't know.
One of the most fun times that I had was I went in there and there were three people. And I was like, well, this is going to get interesting.
You rang a sinister bell.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, let's see how it is. And I was in that part of Yharnam where it's like a huge circular... kind of town square where there's two of those huge axe guys.
Yeah.
So the three guys saw me and I was like, okay, well, might as well. And so like I ran over to that area and started using those guys as like human shields to fight off the other guys.
Yeah.
And I was focused only on my target because if I knew if I killed him.
Oh, because it was his world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I was like trying to distract his other two buddies with like the other guy. And like I was able to like separate him off from the pack while his friends were like fighting the big guys and just like just assassinating him.
Oh, did you kill him?
Yeah, I killed him, man, and then so I just ran off. Like, and so his guys like just looking around is like I'm like stabbing
and
him.
And then they got teleported away, presumably, right?
Exactly. Like, and that just ends the encounter. But it's like you're looking at like, okay, how That's do so I cool. use everything to my advantage? Enemies, terrain, a blind corner, like anything that I can do. And you know, people will do that to you too. Like one of the another super intense time was in the Nightmare Frontier where you fight those two hunters really close to each other. It's like right after you go through the rocky place.
Oh yes, that was crazy.
Someone fucking warped in at that time and they were just standing on the cliff watching me fight these two hunters. And he was like, oh, I'm just gonna hang out and let them soften him up like by the time he's out.
What a scumbag.
It was so satisfying beating those two hunters and then beating the person watching. Like I was like actually like fist pumping after I did this. It's so satisfying.
Yeah.
Like,
dude, when you get the emote or whatever where you can roar, that's
so many people are doing that now. Like I see someone
after every boss fight, that's what you want to do, right? Like I've done co-op boss fights where both of us almost died and then we survived.
Yeah.
Like I've gone in and helped people. I feel this like pay it forward obligation. Yeah. So as soon as I beat a boss, I'll often help out.
Yeah.
And that roar emote is like, yes, yes. Like we should probably talk about the ending.
Okay.
This is one of the super satisfying, right? You go back to the Hunter's Dream. Hunter's Dream is on fire. You're like, whoa, that's not normal.
Yeah.
Waifu doll says you got to go talk to German. He's over by the tree. You fight him. Mm-hmm. I died, right?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, after dying many, many times, I called in an ally.
Oh, okay.
This ally's name was Destiny, which is so sweet, so sweet. And then we proceeded to beat Gurnam and beat the Blood Moon Presence.
Okay.
And afterwards, like, both of us super low. I don't think that he knew he was going to fight the Blood Moon Presence, because that's an optional boss fight after Gurnam.
Yeah.
And I'm just like roaring, and I'm so happy right now. And like, I'm looking around the room being like, got everyone. I don't think anybody was in the room. And I was just so like overjoyed. I was like glowing with like pride and excitement. And this guy's name was Destiny. And it was like so perfect. So, so satisfying.
So that was what, so we just jumped right into it though. So that was what happened at the end. You met up with Garmon.
Yep.
You,
he's like, you can die.
Yeah, you can die or you fight. You fought him. But then, so you had gotten the other pieces of the umbilical cords.
Of which there are four.
Yeah. Oh, there's four of them? I thought there were three.
So all of the umbilicals are say one third of an umbilical cord.
Okay, so
there is a fourth umbilical cord. Yeah.
What do you get if you get the fourth one?
I have no idea.
God damn it.
I mean, you can eat them all.
Yeah.
But, so one of them, one of the four says something slightly different. They all say, they all say, and I think this is important to the story, is every great one loses its child, then yearns for a surrogate.
Hmm. Oh, so that helps explain the ending of a lot then.
Yeah. So, so you, did you fight, you fought both, I presume?
No, I just fought Garmon. Oh, you only fought
Garmon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Some of the lore is that Blood Moon presence that I fought, which is like another great one. Garmon is his substitute, his surrogate child. When you kill Garmon, you take Garmon's place.
But then the other thing I was thinking about is if you fight the Blood Moon presence, you kind of morph into this weird little squid thing, which is like you're now kind of the surrogate of the Blood Moon monster.
Well, so it says if you look at the trophy you get and you morph into the weird thing, it says that you ascended and became a great one, thus pushing humanity towards its next evolution.
Man.
So one of the, this great fantastic theory again that I like a lot is that the doll is another great one and that you are now like her child.
That's,
so not all great ones necessarily lose their child because this one didn't.
Yeah. Man, that was... And, like, after that, I looked up all the endings, basically. Yeah, so I was like, yes, like, realistically speaking, I'm probably not going to play this game for, like, three new game pluses in a row or whatever. But I was wondering to myself, and, like, I deliberated long and hard about, like, what I should do if I should just die. Because I was like, maybe this is the only way out of the nightmare. Yeah. Like, maybe this is it. Like, this.
I mean, it kind of is.
It kind of felt like it. Well, but then I was like, I feel like my character at this point has become... like corrupted to a point where all he knows how to do is fight, so I might as well fight.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's a good point. Like, in terms of narratively speaking, I think that's a cool way to end. If you choose to accept it and die, that's sort of what all of the others do, right? It's a cycle.
Yeah.
We know that Jura used to be a hunter. Like, when she dies, she's like, oh, say hello to the doll for me. Because she... Or not Jura, Eileen the Crow. So, apparently, she was also in the Hunter's Dream at some point, used to be a hunter, presumably let Garmon kill her, and then she woke up in the waking world and she was fine and she wasn't a hunter anymore, but that cycle continues, right? Where there's like a blood moon and people die and there's a pregnant lady and all that kind of stuff.
The and the one that I chose because I didn't do the rest of the umbilical cords was the camera just swings up and you just see the doll pushing a wheelchair, but then the camera pans up and I noticed immediately that the hands on the wheelchair were wearing the gauntlets that I was wearing. I was like, oh, so no! Cool. And then, like, it zooms out, and it's like, oh, like, now the cycle continues. You're new. You're the new steward of, you know, the Hunter's Dream.
I love that as soon as the game is over, it immediately kicks you back into New Game Plus.
Not even, not even a title screen. It's just like, there it is. Like, you're in.
Well, it's great for your, or for the people who die. Like, that's a great narrative cycle of, like, oh, the cycle's starting again.
Here's the hunter.
There's another hunter, So cool. Although Garmon, I guess, is still in that one, but... Yeah, I thought it was awesome, and the way the doll like picks up the weird alien creature, then it's like, oh, good hunter.
Yeah,
like things, and there's all this weird stuff, right? Like sometimes you go into the hunter's dream, and the doll is singing. I never saw the doll sing other than like looking it up on YouTube once. That was super weird. Or sometimes if you're lucky, you go into the hunter's dream and you hear Garmon muttering to himself in his sleep that he wants out, that he's done with the dream, and he's like apologizing to people like Lawrence and stuff, some of the characters that we know from the world.
Man, and gosh, I was just thinking about all the like all the characters, some of them which I didn't meet, but like the Vile Blood Queen, like what happens, like I don't think I necessarily finished up her quest, but like seeing the what's his name, he's like the paladin looking guy, Alfred, seeing him just go crazy basically through the game
and then presumably kill himself.
I went back because I was like, man, I wonder what old crazy's up to now, and I went back to the area where he hangs out and he's dead. Like, he put the Kanehurst crown on his little altar,
Oh, really?
And he's just laying there in a pool of his own blood.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then you take his helmet, and it's like that sweet flower helmet. It covers your face entirely. It's pretty great.
It was just like some of that stuff that, you know, they put out for you just to make your own interpretation mm-hmm. on. Again, like this is like fundamental respect for the player, where it's like, if you care about this stuff, go for it. Like, we'll make something that's intriguing and like mysterious. And if you don't care about it, fine, just walk past it.
I mean, I accidentally killed Eileen the Crow, so I never saw any of that story stuff at all. Like, and she has a whole quest line and all that.
Did you, we did the ending. I was texting you about the spider. Did you ever do anything more with the spider?
No, so I saw the spider behind a door. I don't think I ever interacted with him. But Patches, right?
Yeah.
He's in the Dark Souls games, as far
and
as I
Demon Souls. Yeah. Patches the hyena.
And apparently he, like, always betrays you.
Yeah.
So does he betray you in Bloodborne?
Oh, yeah. So a certain part of the Nightmare Frontier, when you're out, like, kind of around the area where the big giants are throwing rocks at you.
Yeah, I never beat that boss or finished that section.
Okay. Oh, so that boss is an amygdala.
Oh, really?
You go at the end, a huge amygdala jumps down, and it was the most satisfying experience, because up until that point, you can only see those things. You never really interact with them, and so you fight an amygdala, it's running around the
Does
stage.
Does it grab you with the same purple stuff?
Yeah, it has a lot of laser attacks.
The laser.
Yeah, at a certain point, you like damage its arms a lot, and its arms don't really work. And it takes two of its other arms and rips off the dead arms and uses them as weapons
That's
against you.
That's fucking so cool.
So I was like, man, this fucking game. But anyway, so in the frontier, there's a space like on the... You know how there's that poison river that runs through that entire area?
Me and the poison river are very familiar with each other.
So you're climbing along a pretty narrow path above the poison river, and then you're just exploring. Then all of a sudden a cutscene triggers, and you just see... from a first-person view, something skittering through the grass, mm-hmm. like it's on eight legs, and then it pushes you off into the river.
No way.
Yeah. And then, because, like, at first...
Fucking Patches.
Yeah. And then there's a way to, in the school, or whatever it's called, the Lunarium or whatever, there's a way to get behind that door where you first met him. Mm-hmm. And I got behind the door before he pushed me off, and so he was like, hi, hello, like, do you think you trust me? I mean, we're friends, right? Like, we can be friends. And, like, he's just, like, acting really weird, and I'm like, I don't trust you. There's nothing that you can say. Yeah. He's like, okay, well, you know, I understand, blah, 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 and he, like, gives you some items and stuff, and he's kind of almost apologizing as to, like, how grotesque and weird he looks.
Yeah.
And then I saw him, and then I didn't see him at the Nightmare Frontier, but he pushes you off and is like, sorry, I know I was just looking for treasure, but, you know, you'll figure it out. And he just pushes you off into the fucking Poison Lake, and you have to, like, make your way all the way back around.
So what happens when you go see him again after he pushes you into the lake?
I didn't see him again, and I don't know if this triggers it or not, but then when I went back to the Nightmare Frontier, I saw him hanging out very high on a wall.
No way!
And I couldn't get to him. I was throwing rocks and stuff, and I just, like, I couldn't...
Fuck you, Patches, yeah, I see like, you!
I was throwing shit at him, and I couldn't do it. And so, like, he's just there to troll. Like, it's like all of these things that you can just go...
Oh,
like,
that's so God, cool.
It was great. But, I mean, again, like, there's some things where I'm kind of afraid what to do. Like, at the end, when you are... almost going to the wet nurse, you see what's her face, you know, the lady Yharnam. Of Yharnam. I stabbed her.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did
I killed
disappear?
Her. She disappeared.
Wow.
Because I was like, well, I've kind of like gone this far, and I'm somewhat like I'm somewhat kind of you know, with the Vile Bloods now, in a way, like I'm much more of an opportunist.
So you can fight her. Did you know that?
I didn't fight her. I just stabbed her, and she screamed and fell over.
She's like the final secret boss in the Thumerian Labyrinth.
Oh.
So all of the sort of stuff that you could do separately, she's the very last boss, and apparently she's brutally difficult.
Hmm.
So there's like some theories, like, that's not actually, she's sort of projecting herself there.
That's what I thought too, because I just hit her with one hit, and then she faded away. Yeah. And I was like, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I respected her. She looks like she's in mourning. She lost her great one child.
Well, and you could tell the great one child was cut out of her.
Oh, yeah. She's got blood on her dress.
So there were some things where I was like, maybe I'll just fight everyone from now on.
Just kill everyone.
A lot of the NPCs, I never met... I think I waited too long, and, the crow, I never met her. I couldn't even find her. I feel like she just kind of leaves after a while. I think she
leaves once the blood moon descends.
I think that's probably what happened then, because I haven't met her yet.
Well, and then you, also saved one person that I didn't save. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever fight Iosef?
Iosefka? Well, I didn't fight her. If you wait till after Rom, she's giving birth to a great one.
Oh, God.
The imposter, or rather, she's getting, ascended or something. Oh, yeah, they're putting eyes on her brain or something like that.
Jesus.
And then I killed her, and that's where I got one of the umbilical cords.
And you just kill her, and she's on the table
she's
or whatever?
She's just on, a table, going crazy. Man. She's literally just going insane, Well, and then apparently, Arianne, so just like Yharnam, Arianne is the one that gets pregnant in this version. Did you see her afterwards?
All I saw her is she was, looking really sick, and then at a certain point, she disappeared, and I have no idea where she went.
So you can go find her, and if you find her, she's, on the ground and has a bloodstain just like Yharnam, apparently. Mm. And she, is crying or whatever, and I think you can maybe get an umbilical cord from her or something.
That would make sense.
It's nuts, man. Yeah.
Maybe that's why there's four, because if you don't do that one and you do the Iosefka one, you would need a third.
Yeah, I think there's probably four so that you could get the three.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who knows, right? There could be all sorts of weird stuff. Apparently, if you have enough insight, you can hear the baby laughing throughout the whole game, and you can hear it louder near Arianne. You could hear that that is her noise.
Yeah.
It's super bizarre. There's all sorts of... And, you know, this is the type of game that is super rich with weird lore references, such that I could see people deciphering this for some time to come.
Yeah.
I could see if they do DLC for this in, I don't know what the DLC cycle was for Dark Souls, 3 years.
Yeah,
maybe we'll get something that's really cool and adds more lore and adds more themes to it.
Yeah. God. Well, I'm super happy that you played through this whole
game. I am really happy too, yes.
Because this, like I said, I mean, this was literally the reason why I finally bought a PS4, and it was well worth it. But
totally.
I'm even more happy that the game, this type of game is getting more and more popular, but it seems like it is getting more streamlined. This game was by far better than Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
And not in a way that it's, it's just because it's easier or we made it simpler or whatever. There's a fine line between streamlining it and cutting out some of the cruft and still keeping that core satisfaction of it.
Yeah.
And it's I couldn't be happier that this game is selling surprisingly
doing
well.
Doing gangbusters. Yeah, me too. I'm really happy with it. It's one of my favorite games that I've played so far this year. Super, super good.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll leave it there.
I'd love to hear people's stories, though.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's clear that, we both of us missed out on, some big parts of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of the things that we're describing, people out there are like, what the hell are they talking about? We definitely want to hear that stuff. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net, that's where you can get your own blood ministration. Join the hunt, oh brave hunter. Leave us a review, iTunes and Stitcher, foul or fine, we don't really care, but it helps us find new listeners and perpetuate that hunter's dream.
Ringing that bell. Yeah. Alright, until next time, everyone.
May you find your worth in the waking world.
See ya.